Aloha, everyone. Today's show is for all the armchair travelers and or adventurers who perhaps wanted to join the inaugural World's Toughest Row, but perhaps had some scheduling conflicts. I'll be speaking with Marina Hunziker and Paul Lohr, two of the four-person team who rowed as an R-O-W-E-D across the Pacific Ocean from Monterey Bay, California to Hanalei Bay on the north shore of Kauai, Hawaii. We're talking 2,800 miles, so with that, some grit and determination and buckets to poop in, their adventure of a lifetime supporting two nonprofits along the way began. It's a great story. I'm Robin Clare with Tributaries. I've been to the dark early morning start of the Leadville 100, but the toughest row, rowing 2,800 miles, is another story. Congratulations on your 36 days, 3 hours, and 49 minute finish. That's quite a feat. Was it an overall race as a priority? Was it a priority to win this race?
No, it was not the plan to win the race. We wanted to spread awareness for two amazing charities. We wanted to make our community proud and have a good time. And I think having a good time and being safe was the main goal of the whole crossing. Safety is always first with everything. We did better than we expected, right, Paul?
We did.
Bravo.
We talked about like goals that we had, and we joked about like, yeah, it would be nice to do it in 40 days.
All right.
But we were like, yeah, let's see how it goes. And arriving within 36 days was beyond any expectations we had. It was hard, but we did it.
Indeed.
Yeah, it was really hard.
And Paul, it quickly becomes a community event, doesn't it? The fact that you were rowing, getting money for some nonprofits. Why don't you tell us about that and what nonprofits you raised a great amount of money for?
Yeah, it's a great question, Robin. So we rowed for Canine for Warriors, which is an organization that pairs dogs with veterans that are suffering from ideation of suicide, or suffering from PTSD or even military sexual trauma. And the dogs come from, sometimes they're donated from breeders, but the better part of that story also with Canine for Warriors is a lot of times the dogs, a majority of the dogs, are coming from kill shelters. Canine for Warriors has a motto, a new leash on life. So yeah, it's really moving that it saves both the dog and the veteran. And then we also rode for the Children's Tumor Foundation. And I have to give a big thanks to my roommates because it was pretty dominant. I use that word, but, you know, when we picked the charities, that they really were gracious enough for me to pick the two charities that we rode for. And as you mentioned, the stronger part of all of that, I mean, just not even the donation gift that we're going to give at the end, but just building the community, as you mentioned, really happens. And it's really the most powerful part of the journey. Everybody focuses on social media. Everybody hones it, you know, the day that you leave. You know, everybody looks at June 12th and like, oh, they're leaving and now they're, you know, they're rowing. And I get that part. But really, if you just focus on that part, you miss the whole journey, because it's from the very beginning that you announce what you are going to do, and then really everybody that just kind of joins you along the way. Like even now, Robin, right? Now we're meeting, we're chatting, we're a part of each other's lives, whether you like it or not, Robin, you're stuck with us.
I like the looks of you too, so I think I'm good.
Yeah, so it's a, you know, now you've got this beautiful community that is with you, and they're championing each organization. And probably what we love the most, Marina, I, Matt, and Iris all saw it, is that even both charities started championing each other.
Yes, it's so nonlinear in the connections. It really advances our creativity in ways to become community. I just love it so much. You both did the Atlantic row, which was going across the Atlantic Ocean. So good job. You really figured out and picked good rowing mates. But tell us about the difference. I'd love to hear from both of you on this between the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. It must have been a different journey with what you saw, the wave conditions. Tell us about that.
Well, I did the Atlantic in 2021 in a pairs team. We were the first female Swiss pairs that did it. And we stayed on the ocean for 75 days, 10 hours and 6 minutes. We had major power problems out there. So we had a good time. We had a lot of fun out there, but we also had a lot of trouble. But I enjoyed every single second of it. It was hard in the beginning to figure out how it works to be on the ocean, how the boat works, because you can prepare as much as you want, but basically you're learning out on the ocean. And then, of course, I got hooked to ocean rowing, and I met this handsome gentleman in London. And he talked about the Pacific, and of course, I was in. We were 4 people that all did the Atlantic already. I expected a team that knows a little bit what we're doing, but of course it's a different ocean. It's a different team. It's, for me, a different boat. I really enjoyed the journey. It was hard sometimes with Aris and me being in Europe and the boys being in Florida, but we figured it out. We had a really good time. I got to meet a lot of amazing, amazing people on the journey. I didn't expect that. Like, how welcoming the community in Fernandina Beach is, that blew me away. Like, really. And we were able to visit them, to meet all the people. And then, yeah, we did the cross-country trip to go to California with the boat. And then we finally rowed. You know, like, an ocean crossing is not all about rowing. The ocean itself was a lot more brutal than the Atlantic. It was really cold in the beginning to get off California. It was uncomfortable to be out there in many ways. And when it got warmer, it got super hot immediately. Like, there was no in between. Yeah. It was just a rough ocean. It's just a rough ocean. On the Atlantic, we saw wildlife basically on a daily basis. And on the Pacific, we saw just nothing out there. It was a lot shorter time-wise. It was also different to have a 4-person team than pairs. Basically, I had a rowing buddy now. When you're a pairs, you're rowing alone or you're on a break. Mm. And I was a little worried in the beginning about that because I'm not used to rowing with people, but we did a good job there. Thanks, Paul and Matt. Yeah. You guys are really nice. For me, it was 2 complete different journeys, from both type to how many people on board to different kind of oceans. It was like totally different journeys, and I loved both of them.
When did you notice the temperature change? Just approximately which day? Was it in the middle, or if you want to share by mileage, do you think?
What was it, Paul? It was like, yeah, we expected it to be way earlier than it was. I think it was like between 10 and 14 days, right?
Yeah, I was going to say it was around like the 13th, 14th day that I noticed. And it was really distinct to us. Marina and I always joke about this, and actually the whole team does, you know, and I even got a little thing out of it, a little line out of it, like, I'm never going to row again unless it's 80 degrees or above. Once we got out of the desert, when we were driving across country, because that was something that we did also that was very different than the other row. All of us drove across country. The ladies flew in. We put the boat together. We trained a little bit. And then we put the boat on a trailer and we drove across country to raise awareness and to try to save money. And then driving across, you know, in small quarters, that kind of left its own challenges. But when we got out of, I think it was what, Palm Springs?
Palm Springs.
Marina? Yeah. Out of the desert. It was like really, really hot. And then as we're making our way towards California, it was so funny on how all of a sudden it just got gloomy and misty, even in Laguna Hills. We felt like or I know at least I felt like I never saw the sun. It felt like a month, and it was crazy on how that was. And then really,
it was a month.
Yeah, yeah, we got to I think Laguna Hills like at the very end of May, like the 31st of May. We stood there a couple of days before we made ourselves up to Monterey. But it was really distinct though out in the ocean. All of a sudden we just started seeing some of the sun break. And I remember the expression on all of our faces. We're like, oh my gosh, you know, the sun is here.
It still is there.
Yeah. And it just felt so wonderful. You know, you just can't explain those moments when you're really deprived of something. It gives you that appreciation of really a lot of the smaller things that we all take for granted.
Sure. And do you have other further comment about the difference of rowing in the Atlantic to the Pacific?
Yeah, it was very different. I always tell people there's no comparison like which one was better or which one was worse. And they just were different in their own experiences. Mm-hmm. And to leave them, you know, really at that, the team dynamics were different. Like for me, I was posed with two different challenges. The first row, me and my mates, we were all within 15 minutes of each other, you know. And then this last row, like Marina explained, me and Matt were an hour from each other. And then the ladies were 4,500 miles, another complete ocean away. So that had its different dynamics. But I give a lot of credit to the four of us for staying together during those times. We probably had more stress on us when we were separated than when we were together. Because it was hard for the ladies, and I give them tons of credit because Matt and I were close to the boat, you know, and we were doing a lot of the, you know, a lot of the task. And it was really just by nature, by proximity, nothing else. Once the ladies got here, they jumped in and everybody was doing their part and working hard. But it was hard not being together all the time. And then when we were rowing, and that's what I was getting at, was like when we did our training row down to Cocoa Beach and back, we even talked about, oh, wow, we're all so much better when we're together than when we were separated. You know, it would be like right now if I was, you know, watching Marina do some task and I couldn't help on the boat because the boat is there in Switzerland. It was hard. It was a different dynamic. And to compare the oceans, they were just like what Marina said, you know, drastically different for that time. We felt like we were rowing to Alaska. I never felt like in the beginning I was rowing to Hawaii. There was just no connection to Hawaii. Yeah. And Marina brought out a really distinct piece. There was no in between. You know, we went from really cold, damp, wet, miserable, high seas, high currents, winds, weather. And then all of a sudden, once the sun started peeking out, then it just changed, you know, and then we were burning up.
And did the ocean conditions change at that time as well? What was the largest swell that you encountered? Did you have any waves that totally came over your boat? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There were like 20, 30 foot seas at times with cold water.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a lot of things pushing us in different ways out of California coming off the continental shelf. We had the northern winds. If you look at the tracker when we first took off, there were a lot of teams that were pushing north, because we were just trying to go west. So we really had winds coming from the north, but we had currents pushing us that were coming out from Antarctic and the Mexico shelf. So that was happening in the beginning. And the first time ever I experienced in the boat, the bow going up, you know, generally, you know, everything is following winds and following seas and the stern, you know, you're really looking at it. Because when you're rowing your back to the bow, you know, to the front of the boat. So you're not really seeing where you're rowing.
Right.
But it was really weird feeling the bow go up. I never experienced that before. So that was a really weird sensation.
Was there ever a time where you felt like, oh my gosh, we're going to tip over, or this is not looking good right now? Or
what do you think? For me, Marina, I did. There were times off of California I thought we were going to roll. We never did.
I didn't, but I thought if we roll, we're going to be in trouble. No question. So we always focused on positioning the boat in a way that it's harder to roll. Luckily, like we didn't roll, but we tried to position the boat in a way that it's impossible to roll over. It's not always possible, of course, because you want to row in one direction. I think that helped us. Like if we would have just have steered in the direction we wanted to go, we would have rolled.
What kind of technology did you have to help with the tides or the currents or the weather?
Well, first, we did have a professional weather router that was stationed in the Netherlands. They sponsored us, and they were with us, and I think either one other or two other teams. So every morning, like, Marina would get on the phone, and she would either read the texts that came from the weather router to the crew when we were doing a position relief, you know, when we were swapping out rowers. So we all had the weather data. We had a land support crew that would occasionally put photos, you know, out to us what the weather looked like, particularly when Calvin, when a hurricane was starting to come up from the southeast. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah, that's a whole other dynamic of the row. And then on the boat, equipment-wise, we had two lithium batteries. We had two solar panels, one on the bow and one on the stern. And then we had another solar panel, which we call the 360-degree Roma, that you can place anywhere on the boat, depending on where the sun is coming up and setting. And then we had a chart plotter. We actually had an AIS, which is an automated information system, which takes other transponders from ships, particularly from cargo ships. Mm-hmm. So they would see us and we would see them.
Perfect.
You know, in a certain amount of proximity.
Great.
And while we're on that, though, that was a different dynamic that I noticed from the Atlantic. I felt like I saw a lot more cargo ships than I ever did in the Atlantic. Mm. And closer proximity. We saw a few cargo ships in the Atlantic, but not at the frequency that I saw in the Pacific. And I know in the beginning we were in between two shipping lanes. You had the one shipping lane going to Long Beach, and then you had the other shipping lane going to Oakland, California. And we were kind of in the middle. And then we had a VHF radio. And then we had backups. You know, everybody had a phone, you know, their own personal phone. And as long as, you know, you're keeping a GPS signal. I had Navionics downloaded, so I had the map up on my phone in the cabin. I'd kind of watch it and see, you know, also where we were at on that for a backup. And then we had handheld GPSs that would also could be used. Right. And then we had an iPad. I carried an iPad book with me.
You needed Spotify for the dance party off of your iPad.
Oh, that was all Marina, man. Marina's got the playlist.
Oh, cool.
Marina on that. She's definitely got the playlist.
Oh, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual details about your boat so we can really get a nice picture of your journey. Let's start about your boat. Tell us what it looked like. I have a feeling it's different than the rowboat I might take on Echo Lake Park Lake and bring a picnic.
Yeah, go ahead, Marina.
You need to help me with the feet. Is it 27 feet?
Yeah, it's like 27.
Okay, 27 feet. Yeah. I'm used to meters here.
Yes, feel free. That's fine.
It's 27 feet long. It has two cabins on each side. There's a cabin, and it can host 2 to 3 people in there. The girls' cabin and the boys' cabin. Two cabins that would fit 2 people in there. You have 3 rowing positions in the middle of the boat. We use the middle and the back position to row in, and the front rowing position was basically our living room, kitchen, and bathroom with 360-degree ocean view. Really nice. And the cabin of the two gentlemen hosted all the equipment, like the chart plotter. They were in charge of the batteries, like check the batteries if they're still doing okay. We had the bridal suite. Like, our cabin was a little bigger. We had the water maker in our responsibility. Mm-hmm. So we were making water out of the ocean water. So every day someone had the task to make water for the whole crew. Depended on the level of the sun, the battery level, of course. Yeah, that's basically it. It's not a lot, but it's all you need.
Yes, I was curious. Every time I mentioned to someone after I heard about your race, there was a huge barrage of questions. And of course, water was one. It's like, well, how do they bring so much water? But obviously now there is that technology to desalinate the water.
Exactly.
And you were able to do that daily. Tell us about the rowing schedule itself. There were just three places and yet four people. Is that what you just said? Three rowing stations?
Yes.
So one person was always on break or making water or making food or something.
Yeah, we had a really interesting run on this journey. So we're a team of four, and traditionally a lot of the boats will do 2 hours on, 2 hours off. And that's two rowers rowing. And then let's say the shift ends, you know, at 2 o'clock. The other two will start coming out a few minutes before the hour. You know, they'll get dressed in the cabin, and then they replace the rowers. So, like, let's say if Marion and I get a break, then we go back to our cabins. But sometimes we won't go back to the cabin. Sometimes we'll go back. Like, Marina was really great about this. Like, she always went back, and she recognized water needs to be made. She just would go ahead and just make all the water. Or sometimes if she was getting off, she would make meals for her and Matt, you know, because her and Matt were paired up. Iris and I were paired up in the beginning. There's always those chores that you have to do. I mean, the biggest chore was really, too, was your body maintenance, especially in the beginning. In the beginning of the journey, your body is ripping down the fastest. It's breaking down at a rapid speed. Your hands are peeling. Your feet are constantly wet, you know, so they're chapping and they're starting to peel. Your weight loss is probably your fastest then. Your first 5 to 7 days, you're just really adjusting to how am I going to live on the sea? And it really is that radical because there's nowhere to go. You can't just say, all right, I'm going to get off and I'm going to go for a walk and take this off.
No.
You know, there is absolutely nowhere to go. And then your stomach is adjusting to the harshness of the dry food. And then the amount of sugar that's going in your body because you're eating snack packs in the beginning. That's what we did.
Did you bring high protein foods? Is that your mainstay?
I would say, what do you think, Marina? Like more maybe high calorie than protein?
Yeah, it was just like basically the least amount of food for the most amount of calories. Mm-hmm. I did this time, I overdid the sugar a little bit. Choose a little healthier snacks next time. You don't want to bring too much. You have no space on board, basically.
Right. So how much, like how many pounds of whatever or how bulky could you describe?
I would say like average 100 pounds per person. It depends on the person. Matt's snack packs were heavier than mine, but I think 100 pounds per person for the crossing.
Yeah, Matt had these huge snack packs. They were filled with, like, well, I would say almost 4,000 calories just in the snack.
So was he immediately everybody's best friend?
He had the most diversity in snacks, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just curious because now one of the food fads, there are always food fads and diets going around the planet, right? And there are so many people that are so into just the carnivore diet where they're feeling eating a lot of beef and getting that pure protein is the best way to go. Do either of you have a comment about that, being in a lifestyle that you've just come out of?
I'll give you experience from both rows. Because the first row, I lost 41 pounds. Like, I really was not eating as well as I should have eaten. The diversity of the food was not... Oh, thanks.
I love it. He's holding an Ohana cup, which is the name of his team. Did you name it Ohana because you were coming into Hanalei Bay? Ohana means family.
Marina came up with, you know, we had a weird team name. The first thing that wasn't really floating with me.
You needed it to float.
Fortune cookies. And it was really weird. And we got out of that. And then we battled around a whole bunch of names, a whole bunch of logos and everything. And then Marina came up with Ohana. Yeah, we wanted some definite connection to Hawaii. But really, it was more, I think, Robin, what you were talking about in the beginning, the formation of a community. Marina, I think, captured it really well in the beginning when, you know, we were talking about, you know, we're bringing the Netherlands and Switzerland and the United States together for a common purpose. And so it really was fitting for Ohana.
Okay, so let's go back to your food.
So the food for me, I ended up not eating any of the food that I trained with on the first row. You know, Marina will tell you she loves this, the forever mac and cheese. Like, I couldn't get it down. And so then all I went on the first row is I just ended up just eating my granola. And I had cachava. I had this protein shake, and then I had oatmeal. And that's all I ended up eating, you know, besides my snacks. But it was really weird, Robin. What you trained with out in the ocean and what you thought was really delicious, all of a sudden you got out on the actual row and you couldn't even smell it. It would make you like, oh my gosh, I don't even want to smell that, right, you know, at the moment.
Sure.
Yeah. So I know a lot of us were beef jerky on this one. Mm-hmm. A lot of us had beef jerky in the, you know, in our packs. And right, that sensation of having just the texture of the meat, I know for me, felt really, really good. Because, again, I was doing a majority of granola and ramen for me on this trip.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't lose as much weight. I felt a lot better food-wise on this journey than I did on my first journey.
And you, Marina?
What do you think, Marina?
Yeah, it was weird. For the Atlantic, I trained with food and basically was like, the question, do I get heartburn from it or not? So I packed the stuff that didn't give me heartburn. And out there, like, the best example for me was the gummy bears. We had some gummy bears every day. In the beginning, I couldn't eat them because they tasted like a bar of soap.
Oh.
Like, really, really gross. And I just put them on the side. And at the end of the row, all I wanted to have is gummy bears. Your taste changes out there. And also, like, sometimes you feel like something salty, something sweet, like, whatever. But it can change every shift. And I think the diversity of the food is really important. Yeah, maybe you feel like it, maybe not. You're going to bring it. Or like what we did this time, I used to drink a lot of shakes on the Atlantic because I was just too lazy to eat at night and to cook meals. And I brought some shake powder as well on this row. And then Paul loved it. So, of course, I gave it to him because our main priority was like, Paul needs to eat something to get calories in. And then, of course, I didn't have any shakes, but it was fine. I did really well on this row with the food. I was not seasick in the beginning. That was also a huge difference. Also, it's important in the beginning when your body drains completely that you're not seasick.
Yes.
That was a huge difference.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Just another example, Robin, on the food. So this happened like 3/4 of the way through the row. I was in the back and I was cooking ramens, and then we were going through others, you know, everybody else's like snack packs, and, you know, towards the end, and all of a sudden I pull out and it was Marina's pack. I love Oreos, but all of a sudden I hit like the last row. I ate Oreos the whole time. Like, if you got Oreos, it was like the bomb. But all of a sudden on this row, I hit a point where I could not get, just like with Marina with the gummies.
Right.
I could not get an Oreo down. I was like, I just don't want to see another Oreo cookie. But then all of a sudden, I'm looking in her snack pack, and she had these vanilla Oreos.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, are you having these? Are you throwing? And she's like, no, you can have them. And then she started giving me all her vanilla Oreos.
That's great.
Yeah, and it was so uplifting getting that, because it just...
Of course.
You know, and I would always save it, like, at night. Like, you know, when you go to bed and you feel like you want some comfort food, we did that out in the ocean as well.
I bet. Yes. When I was it was a 10-day hike, I believe, into the Grand Canyon. And we had the saying, eat what's best first, because what's left is best. And the last day out, I remember having a nori with mustard sandwich, and it tasted so good.
Oh, wow.
That was about, we were on our way out, so I knew in another 2 hours it would be food again, but it was just, oh, this isn't so bad. This is all right. So anyway.
Yeah, the ladies were really instrumental. They bought a bag, and I never did this on my first row, and it was really, really neat. They brought a bag of oranges. And we tucked them away in
yes.
the bottom of a bow cabin.
Nice.
Because it was cool in there. And we had an orange a day.
Oh,
and that was not
brilliant.
A whole orange. We would take one orange
and
we would
it.
Slice it up. So you had 2 pieces a day. I remember the first day we had it. It was so uplifting.
Heaven, yes. And knowing that you were going to have that all along, that sounds wonderful. Good, yeah. Good.
And then we brought a jar of peaches because I did do that on my last row. I wanted to save like the jars for the last 500 miles.
Right.
But then we broke into the peaches and we'd break the slices down, just pass them down. And it was really uplifting having that different texture of food.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Fresh fruit is always good. So what about, maybe this will tie into the ecology of it all, but how did you use a bathroom, toilet paper, and then maybe go into how ecologically sensitive your trips were or the trips for the other rowboats? Did you ever throw any plastic in the ocean or?
Oh, gosh, no.
Good.
Yeah, no. Let's jump on that real quick. We were really, and all the boats are this way. Matter of fact, they have the Atlantic Campaigns, the folks that run the event of the world's toughest row. They take that piece of stewardship really, really seriously. And when we arrive, whether it's in Antigua or Hanalei, they do a post-inspection.
Oh, lovely.
They give you a day to rest, but that next day you have to go and take everything out of the boat. And that means even all your garbage. So you have to keep and hold on to everything that's on that boat. Nothing goes over the side of that boat, and you're responsible for that. And they inventory it. They do the inventory before you push off of your food. So they know exactly what you have that went into that boat, and they actually will count how much is coming out when they look at all the garbage. So we laid it all out on a big tarp. And a neat piece, Robin, too, for your listeners and everybody. On this row, we did something really cool when we got back because we had a lot of extra food because we were mandated to bring 55 days worth of food. And coming in at 36 days, we had a lot left over. So we ended up calling the local food bank. And we ended up donating.
Thank you.
Yeah, right, Marina? It was a lot of work getting out there now.
Well, but we had a lot of help.
We did, yeah.
Great, that's a beautiful thing as well.
Yeah, so we broke each of our snack packs open, and then, you know, anything that wasn't compromised, you know, we laid out on the tarp, and then we just put it in a big bag, and like Marina said, we had all our spouses and family and friends helping us.
Nice. So everyone was there to greet you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's how we met Nancy.
Yes, my friend that helped facilitate us speaking today. Tell us about the support yacht. Were there many yachts? And then tell us when you went from day one to day 15. So for you, approximately in the middle, how far apart were these 14 boats at that time? And were there many yachts for support or was there one? How did that work?
On the Atlantic, there were two support yachts. I think going out of La Gomera at that time, and they crossed every single boat and took some pictures. It was not a support yacht. It was more a media boat. So it's like they don't help you. You know, like they just come say hi, take some pictures and leave again. On this row, they had one support yacht, and I'm not sure if they brought the spare rudder to Flying Fish. Well, maybe you know more about that.
I don't know if they brought him the rudder. But yeah, there was one boat that took off this year. But it took off really late.
But yeah, usually like they're equipped with some emergency stuff, like in case a rower gets sick or like doesn't recover from seasickness. But it's not there to just like you drop out because you're tired or like don't feel like it anymore. I know on the Atlantic last year, they supplied one boat with a spare rudder because they lost it. It was necessary to help them, but usually they're not there for support in the way we know it. It's more like for emergencies that they would have some stuff on board. It's not like there's a boat constantly next to every one of the 14 boats. I'm not sure at this time how many miles the furthest and the last one was apart. On the Atlantic, it can be that within a couple weeks, first and the last boats are like 1,000 miles apart.
Yes, I could imagine that. Yeah.
But this time we were all pretty close. We were like 15 days from last to first arrival.
Mm-hmm.
So I would guess it's a little less than 1,000 miles this time. I actually haven't checked yet. I haven't been on Back on social media a lot, still settling into the reality over here. So, yeah.
So amazing.
But I would guess like a couple hundred miles.
Yeah, I think it's critical for your listeners that on this, it's the whole big significant part of the endurance race of the journey is that it's an unsupported row. Marina captured it really well. You know, they're more of a media engagement when they take off. They'll just go out and take some pictures of the team. On the Pacific one, it went out at the very end. So the very, you know, first five boats or six boats never even saw that yacht or even had the engagement of that yacht. And then you really don't see the other boats, Robin. It's really funny. You'll see them in the beginning, like the first day. You know, it looks like you would see them on the tracker.
Right.
But with the line of sight in the ocean and when waves get just even normal waves, you're on a 5-10 foot day, you're just not going to see that small rowboat. Sometimes it was even really hard to see a cargo ship on the horizon. Like when we did the Atlantic, we didn't see Antigua until about 13 miles. That was us. We didn't see the island profile. Kauai was a lot different because it was really mountainous, you know, so we kind of saw it. I think it was like 40 or 50 miles, 60 miles out, we saw it. Yeah, so there's a big striking difference. But the other rowboats in the fleet, really, we talk to each other. Mm. You know, we'll send messages on WhatsApp, and then we also will call each other on the satellite phone, but we don't like physically see each other.
Right, yeah. When you did see Kauai, how long did it take you from that point, would you say?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was like evening and the morning, right?
Yeah, like 36 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. So close and yet so far, right?
It was close to sunset when he told me, like, I don't think that's a cloud. I think that's Kauai. Yeah.
Well, that's where the clouds gather, right?
And then, we arrived the next morning.
Yeah. Oh, so sweet. So.
Yeah, and it's neat. We actually slowed up. The neat part of the journey, Robin, too, was is we ended up actually rowing, and we were falling in with another team called Pacific Discovery, who was ahead of us. Really neat group. They were also a mixed team. They had three men and one woman rowing, so they were a mixed team. We were a mixed team, and we were, of the four mixed teams, we were in the running between the both of us for the world record. So the world record from Monterey to Kauai was 48 days. So both our boats definitely were on the path of beating that.
Yes.
It was just coming to who was going to get it now between both boats. And Pacific Discovery, once they got in the lead on us, and then they stayed there. But we were always just hanging around.
Right.
You know, we were right behind them. But when it was kind of determined that we're never going to catch up with them, Matt was like, yeah, we should slow down and let's check in and get and see Kauai in the daytime, which we all wanted to do. Mm. We actually were talking about that, like, you know, a night arrival versus a day arrival. And, you know, in Hanalei, it's just too beautiful to pass up to not see it in the day.
Had either of you been there before?
I have. I lived in Hawaii. I lived mainly in Oahu for 4 years.
Nice.
And then I used to, when I was in the Marines, I used to go to Barking Sands on the west side of Kauai.
Yes.
That's where I used to get deployed. So I've been all around Kauai. So personally, even actually Marina asked me too, because the one thing I did have on my song list is I had a bunch of Hawaiian music.
Mm.
I love Hapa.
Of course, so. Yes, they're great.
And the Makaha boys, brothers, sons, yeah.
So Marina, quite a finale to go into.
Oh, yeah. Kauai. Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
On the trainings row in Florida, we rode into St. Augustine, and there was a lighthouse. And I remember I was rowing for 2 hours, and then I was supposed to get off. And I'm like, we're just around the corner. I mean, I can stay on to row in. And it was another 3 hours then. And I remember that lighthouse just didn't move.
Right.
And then in Kauai, there was another lighthouse. And I'm like, oh, please move fast. But actually, we were in quite fast. So I didn't feel like it's not like, you know, sometimes at the end, it takes forever. But actually really, really enjoyed it. We had some nice winds from Hurricane Kelvin. And I remember there was a rainbow over the bay. It was so beautiful. And I was just excited. And you see the corner of the Nepali coast there, and it was so beautiful. Mm. And I started making plans in my head where I want to go when I'm on land. And oh. I want to see that. And it was just so beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. Well, Marina, I read in your bio that you cannot sit still. That's hard to believe for someone that spent a month on a rowboat. What was your greatest challenge in living on a rowboat for over a month?
Biggest challenge? I don't know. I struggled mentally more this time than on the Atlantic. Different kind of things. I love wildlife. Mm-hmm. On the Atlantic, we saw like dolphins on almost a daily basis, and they always show up the minute you need it. When you have like a down moment and there's like within 10 minutes, a lot of dolphins show up or something. And we just didn't have that on the Pacific. Mm-hmm. And then I really struggled with the cold in the beginning. My ankles were super swollen and it really hurt to row and to move them. That was a struggle, but still, like, I'm really thankful and I was able to learn a lot from the whole experience, and I wouldn't want to miss it.
Mm. It's funny, the more I thought about it and read a little bit about it, I kind of likened it to pregnancy, because obviously you know you're pregnant when you are, but you don't have a clue about being a mother or a parent or taking care of a baby or even really realize you're having one until you actually have one. So it would seem to me that you could train and get your diet and do all these things before you take off, but then once you're on the journey, it just is its own thing, totally different thing.
It is.
It's really neat, Robin. Matt, our other roommate, he captured that really well, actually, in one of the World's Toughest Row videos. He said that same exact thing. You know, you can go out there and train and you think you know all of this, but then all of a sudden now you're in 20-foot seas with 45 degree weather and 50 degree water. And like Marina said, you know, the threat of rolling, like we felt like if we rolled when we were coming off the continental shelf of California, as cold as it was, that would have been the biggest, we thought, introduction to risk, you know, in the journey of hypothermia, trying to get the body back and trying to reset the body if everybody rolled and everything got wet, because it was just so cold out there. And if I had to debrief other rowers or tell them if they're going on that Pacific journey, it would be that, you know, be prepared that if you do roll, that somewhere in that boat, you've got something that's extremely sealed, that's not going to get wet,
right?
You know, that you can reset yourself with hypothermia, whether it be foil sheets. And we're required to bring those, but, you know, to make sure that they are handy and accessible really, really quick, because that would have been the biggest threat, I think, to us in the beginning of the trip.
Yeah. And what was your greatest challenge then, Paul?
I always struggle with the output for the charities. You know, you want to do the best you can for them. And we made a mark, and it was a really aggressive mark. It probably wasn't a logical goal to try to say we're going to raise $500,000, you know, for each charity. And so I always struggle with that, because you just want to keep doing the best that you can for the charities.
Right.
And I think we're coming close to almost $300,000 that we raised in this journey. The first journey we raised $920,000 for Canine for Warriors. And then here, and, you know, I always try to frame this right for everybody too that's listening. You know, we did that, this one here, in 10 months. Robin, and that was really, really remarkable. You know, we all came together. We put a team together. We trained, pulled the community together. And it really literally was 10 months. It was funny because we even recognized it out on the boat, you know, that it did go up to a year, that Matt was going to celebrate his anniversary on July 17th. And then Matt and I just started talking, because a lot of folks don't realize I ended up marrying Matt and Morgan. I was the one that held the services. And then Matt and I were talking on the boat, and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, you're right. It was a year that you said, hey, you know, I hear you guys are thinking of rowing the Pacific. I'd love to go, you know, and I know Marina was excited. I was excited when we heard Matt was on board. But we still didn't even have the team then. So it was a pretty huge thing that we did and pulled together as four people in a community. And again, Marina captures that. It was the community that really pulls something like this together.
Amazing. How much ahead of time were you getting ready when you did the Atlantic race, Marina?
I decided to do it 3 years before, and the real preparation started 2.5 years before.
Yeah, because I noticed that you all were in the inaugural Pacific race, so that was for 23 this year. But I've noticed they already have the schedule up and preps going on for 24 and 25. So you can sign up for the 25 race now, too. So I can appreciate how much time it takes. And my gosh, to do it in 10 months, it's good. It's like, okay, let's do this. Let's just jump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there were folks I know in my community that were like watching it, you know, like, wow, how can you, like last time, because we were the same as Marina. You know, we knew we were doing it like within 3 years. And then we finally launched our sponsorship package. I think it was 2.5 years before the date, before we left. So we had a lot of time to make things happen. And then this time we didn't. And then we were separated even geographically by great distance. And then Marina ended up finding out, because she was really one that was instrumental in the team on trying to set up a little fundraising on the other side of the pond. There were obstacles just even in that. Right. And I give her so much credit for keep going at it. So yeah, it was a lot more difficult. But that is my big struggle, because you just want to do in the best that you can for the charity. Mentally and physically, I give a lot to my roommates. I give a lot to Marina and Matt, you know, for keeping me going and, you know, that motivation. You need to rely on each other really in that boat, in that context.
Right.
Because really you just have each other out there. And then a lot of times, though, like our families, with little messages that would come into the boat.
Mm.
Robin, I think you said it, or Marina just said it, you know, a lot of times too, even just thinking of the what ifs. I know when Marina and I, we got the opportunity to row because of we had some crew dynamics that were happening, and we ended up just going down to three rowers at the end. Well, kind of like almost in the middle and beginning.
Mm.
And, you know, here was kind of a loss or a little hit to the team, but then it ended up being a really beautiful opportunity, because then we all started just getting to row more with each other, which wouldn't have happened in the beginning. So a lot of times we were talking about, oh, I can't wait to eat this, or
right.
I can't wait to eat that. I can't wait to go here. And Marina and I know we were joking. We're like, you know, we could be in the Maldives right now in a 6-star resort having a mango drink brought to us. And, you know, and that just
where did we go wrong?
Yeah. Instead, we're drinking, you know, really piss warm water that's in a plastic bottle that's been sitting out in the sun for the last 9 hours.
Oh, I know. Well, I just heard you.
Speaking of water, Robin, that was a treat, actually, that I noticed the difference in the Pacific row to the Atlantic row, that I really enjoyed drinking the water.
Wow.
In the first half of the trip.
Mm.
Because it was cold.
Mm, yes.
It was cold in the water.
Right.
So it was cold coming out. And then it never warmed up in the beginning. You know, so it was like every time you went to go take that water, it was like, oh, wow, that tastes so good.
Right.
Until we started getting down near Hawaii, and then we got that old warm.
Oh, dear. Know. Really? Did you ever go swimming? Could you rope yourself to the boat and jump in the water?
I can either confirm nor deny. My roommates, I love the ocean. And Marina loves the ocean as well. And
I'd have a hard time.
Yeah, it was a hard time staying out of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of staying silent.
Every opportunity. And we were always, whenever we had the chance, we let him in and do something, like check the bottom for something.
Right. Oh, I better check the bottom.
Yeah. It was a running joke. And I got to say, Marina was definitely there for me at times. You know, she's like, oh, because, you know, a lot of times everybody would be like, oh, just put the GoPro down there and, you know, take a look.
And check.
If anything's growing on the bottom. But Marina would be like, I don't know, it might need a physical inspection, you know.
Right.
Oh, what are you doing? Go in.
I know surfers sometimes have nicknames, and now I've just given you yours. Paul, it's GoPro.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
So we actually, Robin, had an incident. Our Dagobert, we had a special Dagobert made, and it worked because we wanted it just
what to bring is a Dagobert?
The Dagobert would be in the front. It would act like a keel in a sailboat, if people can relate it that way.
Gotcha.
You know, it's a long board that just kind of sticks down the centerboard.
Okay.
Would stabilize the boat. You'll get pressure on the Dagobert, and then it won't rock as much from left to right. But we had this one made like almost a foot and a half, 2 foot bigger, and we had some weight on the bottom. But right at the very end of the continental shelf, when we were coming off, we noticed that it broke. And it was made with steel rods in it, so it didn't break off. And it just bent, but it was changing the pitch of the boat. And where I'm getting at was, it was funny because once that happened, I think I was not even 30 seconds. I was like, oh, I'll jump in to see, you know.
How did it happen? What would bend it?
The pressure of the waves.
Wow. Okay.
That's
amazing.
How big. Yeah. That's how big and that's how strong.
Yeah. Amazing.
You know, it was, Robin. I mean, that really, for your listeners, for those that are not ocean going or seafaring, the power of the ocean, it is really immense. You know, it's going to win every time.
Yep. Yeah.
They tied me tight and we still had like, gosh, they were still really big seas.
That was not, I was not happy that he went in there.
Mm.
I told Matt, like, just make sure he's really buckled up. And he was like, yeah, I'm in. When it's on the watch, really, like, everyone has tasks. Because I was not happy having a person overboard at that point.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we had to do something. And
we ended up discovering that the actual Dagobert was not going to go back up, you know, all the way. It splintered in such a way to prevent that. And then Matt and Marina sawed that thing off, and give them credit, for 2.5 hours it took to finally get that Dagobert separated from the boat.
Wow.
It took a while. But the beautiful part about it was the volunteer that made that. It really, really served its purpose. We actually probably should have pulled it in, you know, because it's already served its purpose, you know. But it was working so well, we really kept it in. It was like Marina was saying, it really stabilized the boat, especially from all those competing forces of the current, you know, the big waves and then the wind.
Right. Well, is there anything either of you would like to share about the trip that hasn't been spoken about yet?
Just still like overwhelmed with the whole community. I mean, still in contact with people. Patty just texted me today, and I miss all the people. I'll be back in Florida soon.
Oh, they're looking for you, Marina. Everybody keeps asking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody loved them. You could see, Robin. Everybody loved Marina, which was beautiful. It was really neat seeing Marina's husband again. And you know, now I feel like I've gotten closer to him. Like if I see him in a couple of years, there's going to be that everlasting connection.
Absolutely.
Just like even on social media, I see my friend Jimmy, and he's interacting with Marina on social media. And it's nice. Like our relationship now, right, Robin? I'm sure it will go beyond the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm confident in that because it's just gone that way with everybody that we've met. And I think if I can, Robin, if I was talking to you before, I can capture this again. When you talk about struggling mentally or being strong mentally, I kind of phrased it this way when I was on the Atlantic Ocean, and I will ditto it on the Pacific. It's like the ocean kind of shapes you as an individual, builds your resolve, it builds your perseverance. It could tear it down and it could build it back up. But the community really reshaped my heart. And I think it really reshaped all our hearts.
Yes, absolutely.
It's an everlasting journey. You'll die with it. It's just one of those life-altering a moment in your life.
Yes, and perfect time to quote your team quote. We believe in the healing power of our ocean and that what is within you is stronger than what's in your way. You all certainly live that. And Paul, when you mentioned across the pond, because I've used that term quite often, but you've really earned the right to call it the pond because you've rowed across it.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll tell you, you know, Robin, it's altering from a viewpoint, right? Everything is about perspective and your viewpoint. Going back home, jumping on the United flight, and we're up in the air. Now you cross this ocean and in 5 hours, you know, we're landing back in LAX. You know, and I'm like, wow, I just went.
That's so easy.
Yeah. And I was served beverages.
Cold beverages.
You know, I remember when my mates and I flew out of Atlanta to Amsterdam, and I had a really surreal moment on the plane, you know, because you're going across and you're like, wow, are we really going to row? Because there the flight was longer. I think it was like 6 to 8 hours from Atlanta to Amsterdam. And it's daunting.
I would say.
I even loved it in Hawaii because I know my girlfriend, when she was flying in, we were already in the Hawaiian Islands. Marina, I think we were just north of the Big Isle. And I'm thinking, oh, here we are, still out in this vast ocean. All our family is coming in by plane.
Yeah.
You know, even my friend said it, Jimmy said it. You know, he said when I was flying in, I was looking down, knowing that
I
you
think
guys
everyone
were out
did that.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for you. Yeah. Well, it's interesting the way you just spoke about that, having a surreal moment. I love the situations where we really are placed where something isn't physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. It all co-joins, is one. And it's such a beautiful reminder of what all of life is, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't take credit for this quote, but I don't even know who says it, but I love it, really. One of my favorites. And it's like, sometimes you find yourself in the middle of nowhere, and sometimes in the middle of nowhere, you find yourself.
And yourself.
Mm. Yeah. That probably could have been a daily mantra for you all.
it was a daily mantra.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was an hourly mantra.
Oh, yes. Yeah. When you were talking earlier, I thought, oh, I've got a joke for you to share on your phone calls with your other fellow boats next time you're out. You can say, oh, I just measured a rainbow. And then they'll say, how much did it weigh? And you can say, I can't tell you exactly, but it was pretty light.
Oh, wait a minute. Brr.
That's a Ben Dad joke.
That's a Ben Dad joke.
We'll tell Ben Dad when he's out there.
Robin, I think I found your roommate, and we're going to have to pair you up with Ben. So Matt's old roommate, Ben, who's actually going to go out and row, him and his wife are going to row in 2026. Their team is called Couples Therapy.
Oh, good. And I bet there were some great names of boats.
But Ben was known for, I don't know if you want to say the best dad jokes or the worst dad jokes. And they were just like that. I mean, he would just come out with these.
Well, then I'm honored.
Yeah, these one liners. Oh, yeah. No, that was great, Robin. That was, we'll pass it on to the future Pacific rowers.
All right. This was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Such a pleasure. I love stories, events that a lot of people never hear of. And now they'll not only get to hear about it, but so many beautiful pieces of the story. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I mean, that's a big centerpiece, as you know, too, Robin, of Hawaiian culture. That phrase is to talk story.
Yes, yeah.
And it's beautiful. And I think the biggest thing that you've given us, Robin, today is, again, really where it's all at, you know, is why we took to the ocean, is to bring a community together and advocate for our charities. So you've helped that immensely. We appreciate you.
Well,
and we appreciate this time.
Yeah. There really, truly is a lovely community on this earth, regardless of what the news tries to tell us every day. So I'm glad we could all take part.
Yeah, there's fabulous stories out there, beautiful stories out there.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. Okay, who's signing up for Outward Bound to start? What a great tale from Paul and Marina. For anything Tributaries related, you can go to tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are everywhere, and I think we might be on YouTube now. So check it all out. Let us know what you're thinking. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.